Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Woohoo! We're back at it, kids. Here we go. Inside the playbook for a Tuesday. It's game week 16. Opponent, Arizona. Final regular season game at Gillette Stadium for the 2008 season. And, of course, the Patriots still very, very much in the thick of things in terms of postseason possibilities. And quite frankly, I'm not sure there were too many of us that would have thought that to be the case when we dial it all the way back to week one some 4 months or so ago. But, you know, as the popular saying is around these parts, it is what it is. This team should be given a tremendous amount of credit for getting where they are and putting themselves in position in spite of the near absolute debilitating injuries that this roster has gone through. As we start today, obviously there's really nothing terribly, of an important nature or an urgent nature to update you as far as Matt Light is concerned. I know the guys talked about it a little bit in the earlier show, and you may have heard it or seen it today, but Matt Light suffered what is thought to be perhaps a slightly separated shoulder in the win over Oakland on Sunday. But Bill Belichick saying yesterday and reiterating again that he didn't think that was going to keep him from his normal duty, as vague as they like to be. So we'll get a further update tomorrow when the guys get back to practice. Of course, this being Tuesday, this is the first time really in a couple of weeks that the guys have had a regular week, especially around here, right? After having to get ready 2 weeks ago to go out on the West Coast and then staying out on the West Coast last week in San Jose. Everybody's back home in the comfy confines of Gillette. And guys have, of course, today off, and then they will begin practices and workouts in earnest for the Cardinals tomorrow. And then, of course, when the participation report comes out at 4 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, then we'll get a little bit more of an update then as to Matt Light's status. But, and again, that would, you know, I'm not sure that would bother anybody one way or the other. You just plug somebody in the hole and hope they can do the job. And you have to admit, yeah, some of the guys that they plug in these holes this year have not been who you or I in a perfect world would plug in. But you know what? They've done enough. And if the Patriots were ever going to have a year in which you thought, okay, this schedule is easier, this would be the year to have it because of the rotation and because of the way that they've had the injuries and the way everything has worked out. This was the year to have a quote-unquote easier schedule. And it's worked out where the Patriots now still have themselves in position to get into the postseason. Now, of course, as I'm sure that you have probably already determined for yourself, this team is not yet in and is still hanging precariously on the ledge between getting in and falling off. They have to win this Sunday, and they will probably have to win at Buffalo in the final regular season game on that Christmas weekend. And even then, they still need some help. And to sort of simplify it, if not oversimplify it for you, either the Jets or the Dolphins need to lose this weekend. If one of those two teams can lose, that helps the Patriots immensely. And here's the other thing. If Baltimore can lose this Thursday against the Dallas Cowboys, then the Patriots are in prime position for a spot as a wild card team. I'm not sure we thought that Baltimore was going to lose what they lost. Obviously, this last week in that 13-9 game with Pittsburgh, very controversial. Very controversial. I'm still not sure that the ball crossed the plane, although from every angle that I saw, and you probably saw the same ones that I did, it did look like the ball hit the plane. I'm not sure it crossed over it, but it looked like the ball hit the plane on that touchdown pass that gave Pittsburgh the win. That's all it needs to do. Whether his feet were in the end zone or not, which they were, all the ball has to do is hit the plane. If it does that, touchdown. And it looks as if they got the call right. And I'm not saying that because we're all rooting for Pittsburgh in this instance. I just think that it happened to be the right call. I don't think there was enough to overturn it the other way and say, no touchdown. That, of course, is when we get into the whole, wow, you know, I mean, it's complete subjective opinion here. And I still will rail on and on. And some of you have castigated me for railing on about, you know, stuff like that. But you know what? You know, the initial call was touchdown. And quite frankly, I think that's what you got to go with. I think you got to go with your gut instinct and let it play out. And I think that's what happened more than anything else. So what that means now is that Baltimore plays at Dallas. Not Thursday night. That's Indy and Jacksonville Thursday this week. But then again, if Indianapolis loses their last two, the Patriots could get in that way as well. I don't think that's going to happen. But even though the Colts have Jacksonville, and I think they wind up with Tennessee, I don't think the Colts are going to lose the last two. The Colts are probably playing as well as anybody in the AFC right now. Although their defense is mediocre at best. They have certainly shown the capability offensively. They kind of toyed with Detroit this last week. Mild scare, but nothing more than that, really, on the weekend. Baltimore plays Dallas Saturday night. It's on NFL Network. So in that regard, I realize that it probably pains you to think this, but you got to root for the Cowboys. You got to root for, team dysfunction or whatever you want to call them now. Because if you do and Baltimore loses, then the Patriots, if they went out, they're going to get a wild card spot. All they got to do is win the last two and they'll get in. Right now, as of today, they went out. They still need help. But if Baltimore loses Saturday, then the Patriots went out. They get in. That's how it works. Miami plays at Kansas City. Miami plays at Kansas City Sunday, 1 o'clock. And I don't think, even though, you know, Kansas City lost a crusher this last week to San Diego, should have won the game. Obviously, San Diego came in and won it at the end, keep them at least mathematically alive in the AFC West, two games back of Denver with two to play. I don't think Kansas City is going to win this game at home, although stranger things have happened, right? Stranger things have happened. I think the much more likely scenario is that the Jets go to Seattle and lose. Now, I think everybody recalls what kind of a struggle the Patriots had with Seattle 2 weeks ago. The Jets are so stinking lucky. They were due a break after losing two games almost inexplicably. They were probably due a little bit of karma, and they certainly got it. They may have gotten a whole season's worth of karma in stealing one away from Buffalo. And by the way, and I know that everybody's railed on this, and but I got to rail on it for a second, because quite frankly, what in the world is Dick Geron thinking on 2nd and 5 with 2 minutes to go on a rollout when they've been gouging the Jets basically with the run all game long? To me, that's almost a fireable offense. And I know that the Bills just re-upped the guy. They just extended Geron's contract, I believe, through 2011 or 2012. I believe through 2011, which gave him a 3-year extension. But honestly, if he's falling on the sword for, you know, the coaches on this one, or maybe indeed he did say, all right, you know, I like the call, let's go with the call. Maybe he did that. I don't know. But whoever is responsible for that call really, at the very minimum, ought to have their head examined, if not have their, you know, pink slip handed to them. Because that is just absolute stupidity. J.P. Lossman is terrible, and I think we all realize that. The Bills realize it. That's why Trent Edwards took the position away from him. J.P. Lossman can't get it done. For whatever reason, J.P. Lossman has just an unfathomable ability to screw things up. Things will be going well, and it'll go well, and it'll go well, and then he does something stupid. Now, I realize in a lot of cases, plays are probably being called for him, but he doesn't execute. He can't execute. His footwork is slow. His accuracy is not good. He's always throwing high, and I think we saw that, did we not, on Sunday? He was off with a lot of passes. He threw, what, three picks on Sunday? I mean, you know what? I mean, he's lucky he has a job. The only reason that J.P. Losman has a job is because the Bills screwed up by selecting him first a few years ago, and they just don't. They want to make sure that they at least get a little something for the salary they're paying. Trent Edwards is a better quarterback. He's hurt. Losman's back in there. Losman almost pitched this team to a win, and quite frankly, the key word is almost. He didn't do it, and he didn't do it because he's terrible. Oh, I mean, Jets fans should be sending Losman thank you, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays cards to him. Because that's what they got. They got a gift. They got a gift. It was Joe Pisarcik all over again, right? Those of you who go back a ways, back to the, you know, the, what was that, 1970s? When Joe Pisarcik of the Giants fumbled the ball on a handoff late in the game as the Giants were trying to sack away the Eagles. And Herm Edwards comes up with a loose football, and bang, the Eagles end up winning the game. And, oh, what a, it's one of the all-time stupid plays in the history of the NFL. You see it on NFL films a lot. This one's going to go, and if this game, if that one puts the Jets into the playoffs, if the Jets get into the postseason, either as the wild card or certainly as the division champion. If the Jets get in, that play will live on in infamy, just like you've seen the Pisarcik play live on after all these years, after three decades. That play is going to live on. Mark my words, it's going to live on. That will stand out in Jets football lore and in Bills football infamy. Forget the four Super Bowls they lost, although nobody's going to. At least they made it to the big game. At least they won something. Bills had a chance. I realize they're not going anywhere this year, but they had a chance to stick it to the Jets. They had a chance to have a positive influence in their own estimation here, I suppose, but a chance to make a difference in the AFC East race. Here's a team that began this season 5-1, and everybody was lauding the Bills as, oh, they're the team to beat. Patriots have lost, you know, Tom Brady. The Bills are going to be, I mean, we talked here even with Vic Carucci of NFL.com. Former Buffalo News guy, right? And he thought the Bills, when they were 5-1, one of the best five teams in the National Football League. What am I missing here? Obviously, they've had some injuries too. But the Patriots have had injuries, and they're 9-5. Bills have had injuries, they're 6-8. And they should be 7-7. But that was a total and complete choke. I don't say that often about a lot of things in the NFL, although I will also say this about the Patriots game on Sunday. I thought Oakland laid down and died. I thought they curled up in a fetal position for the most part. About half of the team curled up in a fetal position and said, "Uncle." Some of the guys came to play. I think the younger guys came to play a little bit, but some of the veterans on that team just curled up in a ball and died. I thought the Patriots scoring first four times they touched the ball, and then they get the kick return after Oakland had scored on the kick return, I thought to me was just unbelievable. I mean, Oakland just kind of curled up and just, you know, whimpered away. And a once proud franchise in the NFL is an absolute joke. I know we do a lot of nitpicking on Tuesdays, right? Nitpick Tuesday, for those of you familiar with the program here. My biggest nitpick over Sunday's win, and yeah, a win is a win, right? It's hard to nitpick when a team is, you know, healthy, or shall we say unhealthy, like the Patriots are this year. Hard to nitpick, and we talked a lot about that last week. But, you know, if we're going to nitpick anyway, because by golly, that's what we do here on the program. My biggest nitpick really is special teams. I think the Patriots' special teams offensively have been adequate. I think Ellis Hobbs has had a pretty good year returning the football. He's certainly been amongst the league leaders in kickoff return yardage all season long. But defensively, Patriots' kick coverage has been lousy for the most part, and it almost cost them on Sunday. Now, I don't think the game was ever in doubt, but it was a big momentum swing. Cut it to a two-score game. And the Patriots could have let it get out of hand, and Ellis Hobbs came through in the end. So I guess that's my biggest nitpick. That's the one area that I don't think you necessarily need studs. I don't think you necessarily need superstars. I think you need a bunch of guys willing to go make plays. I think you need a bunch of guys that are hungry, rabid, so to speak, right? That's how Larry Izzo has made a name for himself as a football player, because he has been that kind of a leader on special teams. You know, Kelly Washington's had a great year, I think, for the most part, on special teams. We've seen some other guys. Ray Ventrone, great year on special teams. Those are the kind of guys you need on special teams, but our coverage has just been lousy. And it certainly was lousy Sunday. And yet it didn't cost him, because the Raiders were even lousier. Hard as it may be to believe, lousier. So just some initial thoughts off the top of the head here as we open up a Tuesday playbook. Hey, coming up in about 10 minutes, Darren Urban, who covers the Arizona Cardinals for the team website, azcardinals.com. He's going to join us as we start to look ahead toward the matchup with the Cardinals here at Gillette on Sunday. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today is scheduled to join us in the 3 o'clock hour as well. So that's what we have cooking here inside the playbook today. We'll go over some news and notes, recap the Raiders win that puts the Patriots at 9-5 and still in a three-way tie for first in the AFC East with the Jets, with the Dolphins, all at 9-5. And yes, we'll continue to kind of hash out and rehash the playoff scenarios. I'm sure many of you are already well-versed in what has to happen for the Patriots to be playing in the postseason. It's a little simpler this week, but not much more so. It will become very simple, as I mentioned earlier, if Baltimore loses at Dallas this Saturday. So we're all going to put on our big happy stars. We're all going to be putting on our boots, right? Wrong. But you know what? You know what I mean. You have to root for the Cowboys in this instance. You root for the Cowboys. Baltimore goes down. Patriots went out. They're in. They can't do any worse than the wild card. Now, I think everybody would like to keep the AFC East division streak alive. Patriots have won 5 straight division titles. Try to make it 6 if they can end up on top. And, yes, of course, that would also mean that you get a home game in the playoffs rather than having to go out on the road in wild card weekend. Very least, you'd get a home game. And for the AFC East championship to happen, it's pretty simple. You got to win out, number one. So that means you win Sunday against Arizona, and then you win on the road at Buffalo to wrap it up. You need either Miami or the Jets to lose this Sunday. Let's say Miami wins, the Jets lose. All right, that knocks the Jets back, which means then the following weekend, the last weekend, you need the Jets to beat Miami. That's what would have to happen. If Miami loses and the Jets win, then you reverse it. Then you need Miami to beat the Jets. That's how it works. It's that simple. I've laid it all out in front for you. That's what has to happen for the Patriots to get in as the AFC East champion. Both of those teams need to lose once in the both of the teams need to lose one time each in the next 2 weeks. Somebody's going to lose in the last week. The other team has to lose this week. That's really how it plays out. So we'll know going into the last week if it can happen. Now, if both teams win, if Miami wins and the Jets win this Sunday, Patriots can't win the division title. They cannot win it. It's over. And that means that the Miami-New York Jets game in Week 17, which, of course, by the way, is at the Meadowlands, that means that the Miami-New York Jets game is for the AFC East Championship if both teams win this Sunday. And that means, of course, that if Baltimore doesn't lose to Dallas, then that means, you know, that means that Baltimore then would need to lose at home against Jacksonville on the last Sunday for the Patriots to get in. So if Baltimore wins, the Jets win, and Miami wins, it's going to be really hard, kids, for the Patriots to get into the playoffs. So those are the 3 games you must be interested in this weekend. To me, this weekend decides it all. This is it. Yes, I realize that, you know, you still have to take care of your own business in Week 17. But this weekend, Week 16, those 3 games, they will decide the Patriots' playoff fate for 2008. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. If they all three win, it ain't happening because I don't see. I mean, well, first of all, whoever wins between the Jets and Miami, they're in as the champion of the division. If Baltimore wins, they're in as the wild card. Forget it. It's over. I don't see Indy losing. I think Indy probably wins the last. Not only does Indy beat Jacksonville this week, I see Indy beating Tennessee. Tennessee has nothing to play for. How else do you explain them losing to Houston this last weekend? How do you explain that? They really don't have anything to play for. Are they middling? Probably. Are they really a 12-2 team? Well, that's what the record says. Whether they're playing like it or not, who knows? They can still limp in at 12-4. They're still going to get a bye. And so that you still have to consider them a favorite. Although right now I think the favorite in the AFC is Pittsburgh, based on what I saw, you know, in that game against Baltimore. I think you have to favor the Steelers. I think the Steelers are playing as good a football as anybody in the NFL right now. Just enough on offense, but an overpowering defense, and we know that. We saw it here a couple of weeks ago. Pittsburgh right now, to me, right now is the best team in the National Football League. But that also shows you how close, incredibly, the Patriots really are in this whole process, to be honest with you. And it's a close game at halftime. Really, the Patriots gave that game here to Pittsburgh, don't we? Do we all agree on that? They handed it to them on a silver platter with the five turnovers. So the Patriots aren't far away. If you can hold on to the ball and battle them, I realize you'd have to go to Pittsburgh in this particular instance. But why should that scare anybody in that locker room down the hallway? Why should it scare them? They've won two AFC titles on the road in Pittsburgh. So why would going to Pittsburgh again bother them? It wouldn't. But I think the road's going to go through Pittsburgh. So there you are. You're up to date on stuff. Not that you didn't know that. You probably already did. But I hope that it's, you know, simplifies the process for some who might be wondering, hey, what about this? What about? No, that's the deal. This weekend's it, kids. This is it. Patriots have to win. But before the Patriots play the Cardinals on Sunday, Dallas needs to beat Baltimore. If it does, then the door's wide open for the Patriots to get in, at least as a wild card, and be playing into January. If Baltimore wins at Dallas, kudos to the Ravens, and then they would have to lose at home to Jacksonville, which I don't think is going to happen, for the wild card to happen. Because, again, I don't see Indy losing, but Indy's the only other team in the mix here. AFC East title, pretty simple. Either Miami or the Jets has to lose Sunday. If one of those teams loses, then the door is still open for the Patriots. If they both lose, the door is still open for the Patriots. It would only help matters, right? It would certainly help matters. So there you go. As far as a question of the... What do we do? Oh, you hit the button, didn't you? Okay. I was about to say, am I out of time? Time to go home yet? As far as the question of the day today, frankly, you know, we got the Pro Bowl coming up. Obviously, the Pro Bowl voting is due this afternoon. We anticipate Pro Bowl voting probably being known somewhere around 4 o'clock Eastern. My guess is we'll probably be done with the show before the vote comes out. But if we do get it beforehand, we'll obviously pass it along to you here. Other than Wes Welker, anybody else worthy on this team in your estimation? That's what I wanted to ask you, number one. Wes Welker certainly deserves it. I hope that he gets in. If he doesn't, it's a travesty. It's a crime. But anybody else on this Patriots team worthy of a Pro Bowl vote in your mind? Webradio@patriots.com. Email address 508-543-7482, the telephone number. And what's the most likely scenario for the Patriots in the playoffs? As division champ or as the wild card? Take your pick. Tell me what you think is the most likely way. What is the easiest way, in your estimation, for the Patriots to reach the postseason, based on some of the things that you've already surmised in your own mind and what you just heard me tell you in terms of the lay of the land as far as the postseason scene is concerned in the AFC. What's the easier route for the Patriots to get in? And which do you ultimately think they will make? Or will they not make it at all? Let me know what you think about the Patriots and their postseason chances as well. So Pro Bowl, postseason. Two things on the mind. Get to it. Type up the emails. Send them off. Webradio@patriots.com. I'm going to take a timeout here, and we'll look at some emails, and we'll also visit with Dennis Urban from AZ Cardinals. Darren, excuse me. I said Dennis, didn't I? See, I do that all the time. I'm very Yogi Berra-ish sometimes, you know? Little foibles, you know, just a little couple of letters wrong here and there. It's probably the senility setting in. I suffer from CRS. Stripper sent you that? He's an You found it, didn't you? Go to hell, all right? Thank you, Dan. All right, we continue with Darren Urban from azcardinals.com. Coming up inside the playbook.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Yeah, let's go, Pats! Woo! Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
The New England Revolution have the perfect shopping plan to avoid crowded malls and long lines during this hectic holiday season.
Oh, what a save, Reese, again!
This year, get everyone on your list the Revolution Holiday Pack. With the Revolution Holiday Pack, you'll skip the lines and they'll get tickets to four soccer matches of their choice. And they'll get to pick their seats before tickets go on sale to the general public. Plus, they'll receive a limited edition, full-color 2009 Revolution wall calendar featuring their favorite players. We know managing the holiday budget is more important than ever, and that's why the Revolution Holiday Packs start at just $76. We even offer flexible payment plans. You can pay $25 now and the rest in 09. Get your holiday shopping done quickly and easy by ordering the New England Revolution Holiday Pack. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to RevolutionSoccer.net and give the gift of Revolution Soccer. Pride.
Knockdown, it's loose.
Passion.
And it's in.
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Patriots fans, this holiday season, there's more reasons than ever to head to the Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Not only will you save big, but you could win incredible prizes just for shopping. Enter the Ultimate Holiday Contest, and you might win a VIP game day experience. A tour of the hall at Patriot Place presented by Raytheon, given by a Patriots Hall of Famer. Dinner with the head coach, and much more. Plus, get a free Patriots gift with any $50, $100, or $200 purchase at the Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Can't make it to the stadium? Log on to PatriotsProShop.com and take advantage of the $5 flat rate for shipping on every order, regardless of size or destination. The Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open year-round, Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on PatriotsProShop.com. Stop in or log on now and enter the ultimate holiday contest at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room. In-store promotions not valid on game day. See site for details.
Inside the Patriots playbook for a Tuesday. Again, it is week 16. It is game week, Arizona, as the Patriots return to Gillette Stadium after two in a row out on the West Coast and a successful two-week road trip, I might add, as Pats move to 9-5. The Arizona Cardinals coming up Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. The kickoff, Fox will have the television coverage nationally. Darren Urban covers the Cardinals for the team's website, azcardinals.com. He joins us inside the playbook. Darren, thank you for the time. It's great to visit with you.
Well, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
NFC West champs. How does that sound?
Well, it sounds really good. It sounded a lot better to everybody around here, I think, before this weekend when they obviously enjoyed it a little too much, and it showed on the field when they got hammered at home against the Vikings. But you know, obviously, it's a big deal around here. I know it's way in the rearview mirror for you guys back there about, you know, winning divisions, but for here, when you haven't done it since 1975 and all the troubles that this franchise has had for so long, you know, it is something special when you kind of turn that corner.
There's no question about that. I'm an old NFC East fan, so I remember the heyday when the Cowboys and the Cardinals were rivals in that division, and I always hated when the Cowboys had to play the Cardinals because the Cardinals always gave them fits, even though the Cardinals might not have had a very good team. They always managed to play Dallas incredibly tough. So I'm familiar somewhat with the legacy, but since this team has moved to Arizona, how much has that St. Louis legacy affected this franchise?
Well, I mean, I think when you start talking about legacies, I mean, this franchise has been around for a long time. I mean, it's existed in some form since 1898, which is, you know, 20-some years before the NFL even started. Mm-hmm. So it's got a long legacy, and unfortunately, a lot of it hasn't been all that great. And so, you know, they've done their share of losing and struggling since moving here. You could put St. Louis in the rearview mirror, and you still have a lot to deal with in terms of overcoming things. But I think when things changed was in 2006 when they finally got their new stadium. I mean, you know, you guys know it with Gillette Stadium. When you get a new place, you get all the special, you know, things that come with it, mostly money. Because it's a better place to go, and you can raise more money with suites and stuff, and that's really been the spearhead of how things have changed. That, along with Bill Bidwell's son Michael, has taken a greater role in terms of running the team day to day, and they've kind of, you know, brought, you know, the franchise along and done a lot of the things that needed to be done in today's NFL, and I think that has all helped. I mean, there are still hurdles you're overcoming, but it's a franchise that, in terms of how it does business, both with the stadium and day-to-day, I think it's very much on par with the rest of the league, and it wasn't there for a long time.
Why, in your estimation, Darren, do you feel like it took the Cardinals as long as it did? What were some of the other factors, in your estimation, for this team to turn the corner and become a division champ?
Well, you know, again, when you don't have a stadium, you know, depending on who you talk to, but you know, the stories can vary a little bit, but when the Bidwells moved here in 1988, they felt like they had a handshake deal to get a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And that stadium didn't come online again until 2006. And when you don't have, you know, when you don't have the suites, when you're playing in Arizona and the first half of the season, it's, you know, 100 degrees plus on the field because you're outside for 1 o'clock starts. I mean, that's miserable for fans to go to, even if you've got a good team, and most of the time they didn't have a good team. You're not generating as much money as you should. I mean, that's a big deal. And I think, again, it really, a lot of it goes back to that. And, you know, some of it was just, you know, realizing that, again, today's NFL means, you know, giving contracts with incentives and bonuses, something that, you know, for an old school owner like Bill Bidwell, that was hard for him to change. I mean, he's a nice guy and he's been in the league a long time, but you know, it's just like when you're dealing with somebody older in your family, and you know, it's tougher to get them to look at what things are done, you know, currently, and you know, with computers. I know my dad is having trouble with, you know, I got to use a computer now. He doesn't want to use email. Well, you know what? That's what everybody's doing, and the same thing I think happened with this franchise. And I think when they finally kind of came around to that, in addition to having the money from the stadium, I think it made a big difference. And then you had to have the right coach. I mean, they hired Kenny Green to come into that new stadium in 04, and he was going to bring them in and all this stuff, and that was just an unmitigated disaster. And so that had to get fixed too. And then they brought in Ken Wisenhunt, and I think it all came together at the right time.
I was just going to ask you about Wisenhunt because in light of what happened with the whole Dennis Green scenario, Wisenhunt seems to have been the right guy at the right time, finally, for this franchise. How has he changed things? What's been the biggest thing that you've noticed for the positive for the Cardinals?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple things. On a more intangible level, he just comes across like he knows what he's doing. You know, Dennis Green obviously had a lot of success in Minnesota, but once he got here in terms of the hires he made on his coaching staff and some of the things he did internally and how he coached this team, he just didn't have a lot of people understanding why he was doing those things, and they weren't working. And that goes for players, that goes for people in the building. It was just a disaster. And I think when Wisenhunt came in here, he projects this idea of he knows exactly what he needs done. He obviously came from a franchise in Pittsburgh that had won a Super Bowl while he was there. Mm-hmm. You know, Pittsburgh is one of the most stable franchises out there. And in a lot of ways, they're similar to this one in terms of an old-school franchise with family ownership that has been able to get it done over the years, you know, even if they're not necessarily throwing huge bonus money after player after player. And I think it was he just fit into what they needed to have here. And on a more tangible level, the players felt like he listened to them. He got some things done early on that I think earned his respect in the locker room. For instance, they needed a new weight room. You know, he worked with ownership to make sure that got done when he first got hired. And I think something like that, it made a big impression on the players.
You know, that's you always hear about the term players coach having at least initial success, but sometimes there's not a lot of shelf life for a guy like that. And, you know, I'll give you a case in point. Pete Carroll here in New England. Obviously, he has landed very well for himself at Southern Cal. What gives you reason to think that Wisenhunt could have some shelf life in Arizona?
Well, when to me, in a lot of ways anymore, when you hear the term players coach, it's got the negative connotation a lot of times.
Right.
With somebody like Carroll or something, because people look at it and say, you know, he's just too easy on the players.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Wisenhunt, you know, first of all, I don't know if I necessarily call him a players coach. He is to the point where he understands what it takes to be a player because he was one in this league. He understands what these guys go through on a day-to-day basis. However, you know, another thing that has earned him respect that doesn't necessarily make him a player's coach per se is that he is very much wed to the idea of playing the best player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every coach comes in insisting that that's going to happen, but most of them don't do that. And Wisenhunt does. And, you know, I think that's made a huge deal. You know, everybody knows about the Matt Leinart-Kurt Warner battle. Everybody expected Matt Leinart to be their quarterback because of how high he was drafted and how much he was getting paid in his contract. And, you know, Wisenhunt realized Kurt Warner was the better guy for this job right now, and he made him the quarterback. And there's evidence of that, you know, up and down the lineup, you know, depending on who you look at. And you can even say, you know, the Edgerrin James situation. I mean, Edgerrin James, you know, possible Hall of Famer coming off 2,000-yard seasons, had a good year last year, but wasn't doing the job they wanted to this year, and they decided to make a change. You know, that is something that, you know, tends to make players sit up and take notice. And, you know, again, when you're talking about a player's coach, usually, you know, they often defer to the stars no matter what. And that's just not happening here. And I think it makes a difference.
Well, I'm distracted momentarily here, Darren, only because I'm watching your highlights with Minnesota this last week, and that's probably nothing really to shout about, but I'll get to that in a moment. It's Darren Urban, who covers the Cardinals for azcardinals.com, joining us here inside the Patriots playbook. Let me turn first of all, before we get to this last week's game, let me turn first of all to Kurt Warner and the story that he has been. And you talked about, you know, Matt Leinart a second ago and how everybody thought he was going to be the guy. And what Kurt Warner has done to me, whatever he's drinking, I want to drink, because it's clearly some fountain of youth in there somewhere. And I wonder how much longer you think he's got, and did the Cardinals make the right choice by making him the man?
Well, you know, a couple things. One, I mean, I think, you know, you ask Kurt. Kurt feels like this was always in him. It was just a question of somebody letting him play
uh-huh.
in the right situation, which for him means being able to throw the ball around a little bit. You know, I'm not sure exactly why it kind of came on like this, but if you look last year when he started down the stretch after Matt Leinart got hurt, you know, he was putting up pretty good numbers last year too. The difference this year, for the most part, although it's kind of gotten a little shaky in the last couple games, was not only was he passing the ball as well this year as he did last year, but he was protecting the ball a lot better. Early in the season, the first half of the season especially, and when they got off to the 7-3 start, you know, Kurt was not throwing a lot of interceptions, and he definitely wasn't fumbling the ball that much. And, you know, that's a huge difference. He was making better decisions. He was willing to check it down some more often, and he was willing to, you know, maybe take a few, some fewer risks in terms of downfield passes if he wasn't sure it was there. And I think that was a huge deal. I think it was a little bit of an old dog, new trick type of thing. But, you know, going forward, it'll be interesting to see what happens. He's a free agent at the end of the season. I think he wants to, he says retirement's still in play and that's a possibility. I think personally he wants to continue to play. It's just a matter of whether his family would really, you know, emphasize to him they'd rather not have him play. But I think in the end he'd rather play, and I think he'd rather play here because it's a good situation. So, you know, what do you do if you're the Cardinals? You know, you got Matt Leinart sitting there. I mean, he could, with his contract, he can sit on the bench another year, and it's really not going to affect the team. I don't know if Matt will be all that happy, but he could still be there. And then what do you give Kurt Warner? I mean, his numbers say he deserves a pretty hefty contract. But I don't know if you can afford to give that to an older quarterback, and I don't know if you can afford to give him a short-term deal worth a ton of money when, you know, you can't spread it out over the cap, and you've got a lot of other things to worry about on the roster. So that will be a very interesting situation that plays out after the season.
Is that Wisenhunt's call, or is that going to come from upstairs?
In terms of Kurt coming back,
yeah.
I think at this point everybody wants Kurt back. I think the question is going to be, how much is Kurt going to insist they pay him, and how much are they going to be willing to pay?
Mm-hmm.
I think that will be, if he decides not to retire, I think that'll be the ultimate hang-up. In terms of wanting him back, you know, regardless of contract, I think everybody's on the same page there. I think they know it's a good situation, and I think they know they're a better team if they go to camp next year with both Leinart and Warner rather than, you know, not having Kurt Warner.
When I think of the Cardinals, I certainly think of those big two physical dynamite receivers and Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald, and obviously Boldin, I believe, is the free agent here. So depending upon what his situation is, how might that influence Warner or anybody else's ability to play quarterback in Arizona?
Well, you know, see, that's the funny, and a lot of people, you know, kind of misunderstand the situation. Anquan's not going to be a free agent.
Okay.
Anquan wants a new deal. But he actually has two more years on his contract after this one.
All right.
You know, his situation is more like Chad Johnson in Cincinnati, which is he's got Drew Rosenhaus as an agent, and they have already asked for a trade once last offseason. He put that all behind him to play the season because I do think he's a lot more professional than Chad Johnson is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be reopened. It will be reopened after the season. The team wants to redo his contract. Whether he will be willing to come back here under a new contract, he was pretty hacked off that he didn't get one done last offseason. It remains to be seen, and it also remains to be seen whether they would offer him something that he thinks he deserves. So that is something that will still have to be dealt with, but ultimately he doesn't have a whole lot of leverage. I mean, he is, like I said, he's under contract for two more years. There's not much he can do about it other than complain about it publicly and not show up to voluntary stuff.
All right. How much then, how much would his injury this last year affect, you think, his willingness to be lenient on a new deal?
Well, I mean, I don't think the injury will play a part in any part of it. I think ultimately what's going to make Anquan hesitant is that he was so angry at them during training camp and during the offseason that they didn't get something done. He said that they had told them 2 years ago that they were going to get something done before this season started. And once we got to training camp and nothing was done and nothing was close, he was very angry about it. Now, he said once the season started, he was going to be professional and put it in his back pocket, and that's exactly what's happened. He's had a phenomenal year, and he hasn't made a peep, and he hasn't been a problem in any way, shape, or form. But whenever it comes up, he talks about how this is something they'll deal with when the season's over, and he won't really go either way. I mean, I've asked him a couple times, the way the year's gone, the way the team has improved, have you kind of changed your stance? Because he said in training camp he didn't want to be here, going forward, and it was just bothering him, or he wouldn't ever sign a new contract is what he said.
Okay.
And I asked him if he would be more willing to sign a new contract now, and he's noncommittal. He's like, that's something we'll talk about after the year. And to me, when somebody is that noncommittal about it, that can't be necessarily a good sign that he's changed his mind.
All right. Let's switch to the other side of the football. And obviously, to me, that was what really stood out in this 35-14 loss, especially at home to the Vikings this past Sunday. And I know that that loss pretty much cost Arizona the number three seed in the NFC. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, if the Cardinals were to win their final two games and the Vikings lost their final two games, the Cardinals would be the third seed. But obviously, when you're talking about a magic number of one and one of the Cardinals games being in New England and the Vikings getting two home games to finish up, that seems very unlikely.
Okay. Well, in that instance, I'm still waiting on the secondary to cover somebody. I'm stunned that Tavares Jackson was able to throw four touchdown passes. Why was he able to do that?
Well, it wasn't cornerback Rod Hood's finest day. He gave up three of the four touchdown passes,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he had unbelievable coverage on the long pass to Bernard Berry, the 41-yarder. I still, you know, I've watched that play a few times on tape, and I still don't understand how Rod didn't knock it down because he was right there, his arm was right there, and somehow it ended up in Bernard Berry's hand. So. You know, sometimes that's going to happen and guys make good plays. He got burned on a spin and go move by Bobby Wade. That was later in the game where I think Rod was trying to jump a route and wanted to make an interception and just got burned there. And then there was a slant pattern that, you know, he just didn't cover on. And those were three of the four touchdowns. The other one was a little dump screen, middle screen down near the goal line where at that point, the Cardinals just looked in disarray and they just gave it up. I think it hurt them. You know, when you have Adrian Peterson on the other line of the scrimmage, I mean, that's got to be number one, two, and three goals to make mm-hmm. sure Adrian Peterson doesn't kill you. And I think that hurt them in their pass coverage because the few times Jackson did pass, you know, if it's you're thinking Adrian Peterson, and then all of a sudden the guy's fading back to pass.
Yeah.
And I think that made it tougher. But there's no question. I think the whole defense did not play their finest game. None of the Cardinals really came out seemingly ready to play. Every single one of them said, they were flat, wasn't unsaid. For whatever reason, they weren't prepared. I didn't see this coming because we had a good week of practice. You know, it sure looked like a hangover from winning the division, but, you know, I don't think that's, you know, that can't be your excuse right now. Like you said, they had something to play for with the seeding, and I'm not sure exactly what happened, and I think it goes a lot to, you know, this team just not handling winning yet. I mean, this team just doesn't know. There's only 14 guys on this roster that have actually appeared in a playoff game. Everybody else has never done it, and they just don't know how to be in this position right now.
I think that's actually a pretty good explanation, at least as plausible one as any. Jackson was, what, 11 for 17, and he had four touchdowns in the 11 completions? That's an extraordinary percentage.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question, and it's funny because, you know, Tavares Jackson gets four touchdown passes, it was a story for the Minnesota papers for sure, but on a grander scale, somebody watching from the Cardinal side or watching on a national level, I think for the most part, Adrian Peterson was still the story. He had 165 yards
mm-hmm,
rushing,
mm-hmm.
and he was the guy that everybody walked away saying, oh, my God. I mean, there were a few people I ran into who didn't even realize Tavares Jackson had four touchdown passes because, quite frankly, they weren't the story.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Patriots came in last week with their game and the win over Oakland and gouged the Raiders. Obviously, it's the Raiders are the Raiders, and I think everybody probably realizes that. But nevertheless, it was one of the best rushing performances the Patriots have had in years. They had almost two backs go over 100 yards. One got over, one come very close. How do you feel that kind of stacks up against this Arizona defense? How vulnerable is Arizona to the run right now?
Well, you know, going into the Vikings game, it's kind of a crapshoot for Cardinals on the road. At home, they're a really good rush defense. Now, obviously, the Vikings totally messed that up, but, you know, again, you're going up against Adrian Peterson.
Right.
That tends to skew some things. But when they played the Giants, and yeah, Brandon Jacobs didn't play that day, but they held the Giants, who were killing teams on the run. They had run for at least 200 yards in three straight games, and they had 86 against the Cardinals. So at home, they've been okay. And they've been okay on the road most of the time, unless they got way behind and the other team could just bash them because they were trying to control the ball. And I think that'll be a key this weekend. I mean, I think the Cardinals are a middle-of-the-road defense. If they come ready to play. They can be decent. They can be better than average. They're not going to be the Steelers, obviously, but I mean they can make some things happen if they have their heads on straight. But unfortunately, there's been, especially on the road, you look at Philadelphia, you know, you look at the Jets game. Their heads aren't always, you know, in the right place, and that's why this weekend will be such a huge test for them, because they've got to find a way to play better. Even if the offense sputters or turns the ball over, this defense has got to find a way to get more stout and you know, hold teams to field goals and make some plays, and they haven't done that of late.
Yeah, I think we all realize that teams always want to be, you know, on an uptick. They want to be trying to be as close as they can to playing their best football prior to the playoffs, and because Arizona has lost 3 of 4 after the 7-3 start, as you mentioned, do you get a sense that there now is beginning, at the very least, to be a sense of urgency in that clubhouse?
Well, you know, it's been a wild ride the last few weeks. You know, they were 7-3, and they had a home game against the Giants, and they were jacked up for that game. There was no question they were jacked up for that game. And they came close to pulling it out. They lost by 8 points. It was a home game. There was a lot of energy in the building. Then they had to play 4 days later on Thanksgiving night after a very physical game in Philadelphia. And quite frankly, they came out horribly flat. They looked like they didn't want to play. It was like they had left everything on the field against the Giants, and the Eagles just happened to be next. And they looked terrible. So everybody's saying, well, we know you're going to clinch at this point, but you're coming off this terrible game. They had 10 days. Then they had the Rams at home. They hammered the Rams like they should at home to clinch the division. There was the euphoria of clinching the division. And then came the Vikings game. So it's very difficult to really understand where this team's head is right now. I mean, you don't want to make excuses, but when you sit outside trying to play pop psychologist, there are things you look at in terms of, like I said, coming off the Giants game and spending everything and then having the Eagles a short week, or playing the Vikings with a hangover of clinching. So, you know, does that mean they're ready to get their act together? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if doing that across the country in New England in freezing rain is the place where you want to start fixing things. But at the same time, if they play a good game, even if they don't win this weekend, but if they play well in New England, I think that'll go a long way towards helping their confidence. But, you know, again, they've got to play well. They've got to be ready. They've got to be ready from the kickoff and not sleepwalk through a quarter and have New England jump out on them 14-0 and before they realize what's going on.
You do realize, of course, Darren, that that's what we get paid to do, is be a pop psychologist, right?
Well, yeah, I do realize.
Hey, it is what it is, pal. Let me tell you, that's why it gives us a little work here. So, you know, I was just going to go on then and kind of lead toward this. Here's a team that, you know, for lack of the franchise's success in the recent past, since they moved to Arizona, they finally get over the hump. They finally get into the division, and yet I know that the critics are coming out and they're saying already, and I'm, you know, see it almost every day on ESPN and some of the other places that you hear some of this drivel sometimes that comes out, like, oh, well, they're in a bad division and somebody had to win the division. And see, I'm not so sure I look at it like that. You have to have some talent on a team in order to win something. You can only win the games that are on your schedule, because I've heard people criticize the Patriots. Oh, look at the soft schedule they've had. Well, yeah, sure, maybe so, but you know what? Hey, this is the schedule the team was given. This is the situation the Cardinals are given. This is where they are. They're in the NFC West, and they managed to do better than the other team. So how do they turn that overall into a positive where they can be anything but a one-and-done in the postseason, do you think?
Well, I think right now it's kind of about circling the wagons and worrying about themselves. I think for a long time there, you know, when they got to be 7-3, you know, I think they started having grand ideas of themselves and where they were. And Kurt Warner was talking about that yesterday about, hey, you know, we wanted to believe we were the best team in the league, but you know what? We're not there yet. And this is a work in progress, and it is a work in progress. I mean, when people saw the schedule, when it came out at the beginning of the year and who they had to play and the divisions they had to play, you know, there are a lot of people that assume, like, I could see this team having improved and yet being worse than the 8-8 team last year, you know, given who they had to play. Now, things have happened such that they came out ahead and they're winning the division, they're going to be in the playoffs. I think you cannot lose sight of the fact that that is a huge accomplishment, and they do have a chance once they're in the playoffs. You know, you just never know what can happen. Now, do they have to get better? Yes. I think they need to forget about this whole idea of national respect. I think they're doing a better job of putting that in their back pocket and not worrying about it, because they know at this point what the people say about the division. They know at this point what people say about them playing on the East Coast. And they know that there's a lot of doubters that think that they could win a playoff game. I mean, right now, they're going to host Dallas in the first round. Now, they beat Dallas at home already once this season. Mm-hmm. But the way they're playing right now and the way Dallas is going right now, I don't know if that's necessarily a matchup you'd embrace. But you know what? If that's what happens, that's who they got to beat in the playoffs to win. And I think it's all about playing better. It's like I said earlier, they don't necessarily have to win in New England this weekend to get something out of this trip. Obviously, they want to win. I think it would be huge for them if they were able to win this game. But if they play well, I think that'll be a step that they need right now, because the last, you know, two of the last three games, they haven't played well, and they haven't even looked like they wanted to play well. And I think that's a big problem right now. They got to come out looking like they're ready to play. I think that's the number one thing right now.
Are they embracing coming east?
You know what? I think they're getting better at it. I mean, they finally, when Wisner first got in here, it was kind of, there hadn't really been a for sure thing of how this team would travel. It used to be sometimes they go out on Saturdays, sometimes they go out on Fridays. They weren't really sure what they wanted to do. You know, Wisenhunt even did it a couple different ways last year to kind of feel his way around. There's no question at this point, you know, when they go east, they leave on Fridays, give themselves the whole day Saturday. I think the travel itself isn't an excuse anymore. It's not going to be an excuse. You know, the fact is they have to come out and they have to be ready to play. And the Patriots are a good team. And the other problem that they've got this weekend is they've got less to play for now that's tangible than they did before with the seeding with the Vikings. And the Patriots have everything to play for, just like the Vikings, because they're playing for their playoff lives. And they've got to realize that even if the other team's got more to play for and is more desperate, they've got to match that intensity.
0-4 coming east, and I'm not really counting Kansas City. That's more like Midwest, but I know it's east from you. But, you know, coming east, just for our own fans' edification here, they lost at Washington. They lost at the Jets, a 56-35 shootout. They lost to Carolina by 4, which obviously is a well-played game, but still lost the game. And then they lost to Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, 48-20. You know, maybe it's just as simple as they're kind of tired and, you know, of losing like that, and it's time to put aside some of the naysayers.
Well, I mean, that's ultimately the thing. They're going to look at, you know, they're going to look at the Washington game, which they were leading late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, and they couldn't hang on. And they had the same problem in Carolina. They had a lead. They were actually up 17-3 in the Carolina game before losing the lead late. Those are the games that they want to point to. You know, the Jets game was an abomination. Kurt Warner had 6 turnovers and was just terrible. And they got behind 34-0 at halftime before rallying in the second half with some offense. And then the Eagles game, again, they came out like, quite frankly, they looked like they just weren't ready to play after the Giants game. So They'll look at those two particularly close East Coast losses and say, you know, that we can be in this. And, you know, it's tough because the Patriots, whatever they want to say, the Patriots are the Patriots. And you look at that name and that helmet, and it's tough to not think juggernaut. But the bottom line is, you know, the Patriots have been a little bit banged up on defense, and as great as Matt Castle has played, he's not Tom Brady. And I think you've got to kind of think of it in terms of that and say, you know, these guys put their jerseys on one arm at a time, their pants on one leg at a time. And, you know, if we really are serious about being a better team, which they say they are, we have to believe we can compete with them. And I think for the most part, they do think that.
That's good stuff. Darren Urban, again, who covers the Cardinals for azcardinals.com. I sure appreciate your spending time with us today. Are you traveling out this way yourself?
I will be with the team coming out Friday.
Well, safe travels, and we'll look forward to seeing you out here over the weekend. And thank you again for spending time with us today.
Thanks.
You got it. Darren Urban, again, you can see his stuff online at azcardinals.com, where you can catch yourself up to date on everything that goes on news-wise with the Arizona Cardinals this week as the 8-6 Cardinals play the 9-5 Patriots, 1 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday. Hour number 2 of Patriots Playbook, as we get into it here, we're scheduled to be joined by Brian Lowe from Patriots Today coming up. Need to get to your emails as well, kids. Couple of questions on the table here that we want to get to here in hour number 2. Number 1, with the Pro Bowl vote due out any moment now, other than Wes Welker, anybody else in your mind Patriots worthy? to be a Pro Bowl player? That's number one. Number two, which is the easiest, best, or ultimately the way you think the Patriots will reach the postseason? Will it be via the wild card or will it be as division champ? What do you think it will play out? How do you think it will play out? Will they even get in at all? That's question number two. Plus, of course, as you know, it is Tuesday, so it's Nitpick Tuesday. If you've got some nits to pick from the 49-26 win over the Oakland Raiders on Sunday, we'll then pick away. And we'll pick some nits and more coming up inside the playbook.
Like the Patriots? Like winning stuff? Join the VXP program from Verizon. The same company that always delivers the Patriots to you through RazorShop Fios, blazing fast internet, and in-depth mobile content is now delivering you to the Patriots. I'm talking about field passes, stadium tours, luxury boxes. Want to watch a game from the press box? How about the sideline? Don't like the sound of your own voice? Have a Patriots player leave your outgoing voicemail. That's the level of access I'm talking about here, folks, and it's all a part of the program. So how do you become a VXP? It's simple. Just text VXP Play to 51500 or go to v-xp.com for an entry form. For a chance to win, just answer some Pat's trivia. That's it. There's a new prize every day through December 28th. Text VXP Play to 51500 or register at v-xp.com. The VXP program from Verizon. Victory comes to those who play. No purchase necessary. Void in Florida. Promotion ends 12-28-08. Play daily from noon to 8 p.m. Eastern. Must be 18. Official rules at v-xp.com.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
So, Sarah, how's your holiday shopping coming along? I don't know about you, but I haven't even started.
Holiday shopping? I took care of that last week. Went to Patriot Place in Foxborough.
I've heard of Patriot Place. There's a ton of stores, restaurants, a movie theater. But you got all of your shopping done at one place?
Yep. Took care of the kids list at Hollister and Life is Good. Greg's going to be psyched with the gear I got at Bass Pro, Circuit City, and the Patriots Pro Shop. Bought my mom some really great stuff at Christmas Tree Shop. And I had to treat myself at Victoria's Secret. Oh, and I stopped in for a facial and a massage at Green Tangerine Salon.
So shopping and relaxing? Now you're talking. It looks like my holiday shopping might just be at Patriot Place.
I told you, the holiday shopping for them and a little something for me.
Visit patriot-place.com for Santa's schedule, holiday hours, events, and more. Parking is free with convenient valet and shuttle service available daily. Donate a new or gently used coat to make a child's holiday warmer at any store. Proceeds benefit Cradles to Crayons. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place and Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
It's hour number two inside Patriots Playbook. Yeah, I like that. Okay, we're going to start it up here. I've always wanted to be a DJ. Can we, like, you know, spin some records? Can we buy a turntable? Is that in the budget? Yeah. I don't know. I think most everybody who starts out in radio, as I did over 30 years ago now, I never had a chance to be a DJ, but I've always wanted to do that. Hey there, and we're playing the top 40 hits for you right here on WPAT FM 107.3, you know, something like that. I don't know. Brian Lowe, you exist.
Can you believe that?
Honest to God, I wasn't even sure. I thought you were the myth and the legend, not the man, the myth, the legend.
Oh, wow. Yeah, physically.
The physical presence of Brian Lowe from Patriots Today and, of course, the Fantasy Lowdown.
That's
right here in studio.
I've come to you from all reaches of the country.
Wow.
By phone. But
very impressive.
This is what this place looks like, huh?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
I know. It's been a couple of weeks.
A while.
Yeah, I was just mentioning that a short while ago.
Been a while.
You know.
Good to be back, though.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
If you only have one of those two-week road trips a year, it's kind of different. It definitely kind of...
Yeah.
The season focuses around it.
Yep.
But you guys had two of those this year.
Yeah.
And I got to admit, you know, and I saw a couple of quotes from a couple of the guys in the aftermath of the Oakland game where they said, you know, staying out there that extra week, even though we ended up 3-1, staying out there the extra week definitely, I think, by this last week against Oakland, gave them some extra legs at the end.
Yeah, I think you can't minimize the impact that these long trips have. And to me, it's less of a having not ever really been through it as the athlete, I feel like there's more of a traveling out there for a game on a Friday. I think you can get out there. You leave, in the afternoon. It's sort of an afternoon trip. You get in there early evening. It doesn't really screw with your body clock too much. You have a day to adjust, and then you play the game. I think it's on the return end, leading up to the next week's game, that really hurts them the most. And if they came when they came back from San Diego, they come back from San Diego. San Diego was a night game. They come back in the middle of the night. It's just a wacky, turn of events. Fortunately for that one, the next game was a Monday nighter. But you think about this one, coming back from Oakland, it's probably affecting them right now. They may be a little sluggish tomorrow. So I think staying out there was the right idea. I think it hurts them maybe a little more on the return end leading up to the next week's game than it does while they're out there. So, we'll see. I know I saw Sammy Morris, for one, talking about how, he came back, his throat's all screwed up, and he just doesn't feel right, and it may take a day or two. I just have a feeling, tomorrow may be one of those games where, in hindsight, you hear players saying, I was a little sluggish out there. It's tough to come back. You think about a 10-day trip, and you gotta stay right on the ball. I mean, they've got no time to waste on preparing for any of these games, regardless who they're playing. So we'll see how they are tomorrow, Thursday, and then hopefully, amongst all the injuries and all being beaten down and battered, they can come back and be in good shape on Sunday.
Today's definitely got to be a low down day, right, B-Low?
Today is a
they got to be day. Hanging low today. I mean, they got to get some of this jet lag out and all those, everything else. And
Right. I'm sure yesterday, I mean, it was a 4 a.m. return. I'm sure between yesterday and today, players were in at certain times for treatment or get a workout in, just to reacclimate themselves. But I'm sure it was a fairly quiet day, for all of them, catch up with your family and sleep and all that. Hey, that's what I did, and I didn't even play a game. The physical toll on me was fairly minimal, I think, relative to, a Vince Wilfork or a Dan Copen or a Wes Welker. Not too worried for myself. You know, you take a beating out there. You take a beating on these trips.
Do you feel like the team got through it about as good as they could expect here in terms of the whole 3-1 out on the West Coast thing went this year?
Absolutely, and from all signs point to it having been essentially a flawless trip. Both of them, from a logistical standpoint, from a getting acclimated to your surroundings. Certainly, the second one, being in the exact same hotel, same things around them. Just the setting up the training staff, setting up video and all that. I think it was it couldn't have gone any better. Weather out there was great. I think they had a great facility at San Jose State. So it seems like, from someone who was, you know, there but sort of on the outside, it seems like everybody, it was treated as a business trip. Everything from a football standpoint, they had the advanced people out there to set everything up like they would for a normal trip. And after being out there for 2 weeks, even though they were separated and having, six practices, a couple of walkthroughs, knowing the streets of San Jose a little bit, knowing the hotel, I think you just get into it was easy to pick up on what the routine would be out there. It's one of those things where you can't say that, okay, just because they won both of these games, that in and of itself made the trip a success. I mean, they could have lost both games, but still felt as though during the week preparation was fine. It's just, hey, sometimes the better team on a given day wins that game. I mean, they won these games. They had to win them. They should have won them, and they won them. Whether it was because they stayed out there or not, who knows? It's an intangible thing you can't really figure out, but I think all signs point to having been a success. So maybe, 18 years from now, whenever the quirky schedule comes back and they have two straight West Coast trips, they'll remember 2008 and go back to the same place, and it'll be a success again.
You never know. They can deal from experience.
They can.
It would appear that this team got through the game against Oakland relatively unscathed, with Matt Light having the reported shoulder injury that the local media has gotten a hold of, but Coach Belichick addressed it at least to a limited extent and said that he doesn't think that Matt's going to miss any playing time. And I'm just kind of curious to your thoughts, number one, about that. Number two, whether or not you were aware of any other, bumps or dings at this stage.
No, I mean, other than Light, I mean, it didn't look all that great when he left the field. He clearly was, it seemed to be in
favoring
agony.
It, right?
I mean, you didn't really see much of him after the game. You usually don't after a guy that gets hurt, but you never know. I mean, it could look really bad and then you're fine. It could look like it wasn't much and then you're hurt afterwards. Put it this way, I thought Belichick was even a little more forthcoming yesterday than he normally is.
I was a little surprised. I have to admit, I was surprised when I heard it.
I think what he said was, based on what we know from when the game ended to now being late yesterday afternoon, it doesn't seem like it's season ending. I mean, he never even puts that kind of parameter on it. I don't think it's going to be anything all that bad. I think, long term being, into the playoffs, you'd hate to lose a guy like Matt Light. But, I think Mark LaVore was okay earlier in the season when he filled in at right tackle for Nick Cashier. I think he, I think maybe he's capable.
Maybe that helped him having played at right tackle earlier this year.
I would guess that if you're going into a game,
but then again, it was the Raiders.
It was the Raiders.
Yeah.
I would guess that if you're going into a game knowing that Matt Light is unavailable, Cashier probably moves to left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I think when it's within a game, you're almost like, let's only mess with one position.
Right.
If they have to go into a game, if they announce on Friday that Light's going to be out, which I'm not saying they are, I have no idea. You'd probably move Cashier to left tackle. He's a little more experienced there, and have Mark LaVore at right tackle. That would probably make the most sense and maybe minimize how much of a loss Matt Light is. The way the offensive line has been playing, and hence the running backs, has been really good, and it was great against the Raiders.
Can't complain with that.
You wouldn't want to mess with any success, but then again, they'll probably, if they have to err on playing it safe, maybe they would, because you can't risk losing too many more bodies. Now, you also asked if there were any others. Gary Guyton is the only other one from within that game, and another one. I don't know what the extent of the injury is. I think he came back at one point, but was out again. I'm not quite positive. That's a position that they just aren't enough bodies. I mean,
there is no depth.
When you're looking at when you're bringing in Colvin and bringing in Seau, guys who hadn't been on a team this year, and you have to acclimate them not only back into your system but also into playing shape. You're already at the lower end of guys that you want to have on your emergency list. They have one other linebacker on their practice squad, a guy named Angelo Craig. I don't think anyone has any idea what he can do, but you got to hope that you have every healthy body at linebacker that you can have, because it seems like just about every week you're putting another one on IR. We don't even know yet about Bruschi. I mean, Bruschi didn't play against Seattle. He wasn't out there. But who knows? I mean, that could be that he has to go on IR. No one really knows. you can't afford to lose too many more bodies. James Sanders missed the game. Unknown on his status going forward, but it was good to see Will Fork and Warren both play.
Definitely.
Because that you know.
You feel like you got a fighting chance to stop the other team's running game if you have those two guys in there.
Right, and they've hit up so many different players for roles at linebacker and cornerback. If you can get in the trenches, if you can get your healthy bodies, your fearsome threesome there in there, that's big. You got to bank on that.
Well, you mentioned the running game, obviously, and what the Patriots did on Sunday was nothing really short of phenomenal. They ran for 277 yards on 39 carries against the Raiders, the team's highest single-game rushing total since December 22nd of 1985. That's extraordinary. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
23 years, almost exactly, when they had 281 on 46 carries against Cincinnati back in 85. The rushing total against the Raiders this past Sunday, the eighth highest single-game total in franchise history. Mm-hmm. Sammy Morris, 14 carries, 117 and a touchdown. Lamont Jordan, 12 carries, 97 yards and a touchdown. Kevin Faulk, 6 for 45 yards. And Matt Castle had 7 for 18, but he had 3 kneel downs at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So obviously he was had a pretty good day himself scrambling.
Yeah, and they had high yards per carry average. They broke off the long ones, which obviously helped the yards per carry. But they were just churning it out. And obviously, you know, you're able to run a little more when you're up so much. But you know, you've got to do it with great blocking. They're playing, you know, a pretty inept football team. This Raiders team.
There's no question in my mind that half of that team, and probably the veterans mostly, which shame on them, by the way, because I saw some of the younger guys look like they were scrapping and clawing. I still like Darren McFadden and some of the other young guys. Jamarcus Russell, I think he's, you know, he's. I think he'll be fine. But I saw some guys just basically curling up in the fetal position and laying down out there.
That's just an organization in disarray. And I mean, seeing how they played, I mean, just. What a miserable situation. The fans were, I mean, it was not even close to a full house there. It was raining, which makes it look worse.
How was the black hole, by the way?
Not as vociferous as I would have thought. I mean,
did you get close to it?
Pregame, when it was still tame.
So you didn't get sucked in during the game?
I did not get sucked in. Did not get sucked in. It was interesting to see Randy Moss score his touchdowns down near that end.
Point to the name on his back.
But I'll tell you what.
Did that get him going, by the way?
I think he had this game circled for a while. Lamont Jordan, too. I kind of saw it coming. I just thought, you know, he missed 8 games, got his feet wet last week against Seattle, and it almost seemed like a perfect, cohesion of factors. He's healthy now. He has a game under him. He's probably been circling the state. They could use some renewed energy at running back, and you figure there's a chance the game gets out of hand. They're running the ball more. Mm. But what's amazing about this team's running game, they're going to hit the 2,000-yard mark as a team possibly this week. I mean, their leading rusher has 500-something yards.
Isn't that great, though?
It's amazing.
Talk about the balance. It's unbelievable.
You know, yeah. Lawrence Maroney, you go into the year thinking, okay, he had momentum from the end of last year. He's going to take the leap this year. That doesn't work out, and he goes on injured reserve a month into the season. Sammy Morris misses a bunch of games. Lamont Jordan misses a bunch of games. Kevin Faulk is your most dependable guy, but, you know, it's not like he's a 15-carry-a-game guy. If he gets 6 to 8 carries a game, he'll make the most of it. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, who's your 6th running back in the depth chart, does well for a couple of games. You've got to figure the common denominator is the offensive line, which is all of a sudden having a pretty good year. Early in the year, Castle's getting sacked a lot. You point to the offensive line. Running game is sluggish a few times. You point to the offensive line. They're rounding into shape. You know, they are rounding into shape, and that's an impressive sign going into this end of the season where, you know, if there's a bad weather this week, bad weather against Buffalo, bad weather in the playoffs, you're going to need that running game, and you're going to need this offensive line. So it's good to see that they can plug in, you know, any one of 4 or 5 different guys at running back and still have similar production. And I'll tell you what, I bet most offensive coaches, a running backs coach, even Bill Belichick, if you were to say before at the beginning of the year, listen, your team is going to have 2,000, 2,200 yards rushing. You're going to average 4.3, 4.5 yards a game, but no one's going to have more than 650 yards. He'd say, sign me up. Sign me up for that. rather than the 1,500 yard guy, but your team gets 1,900 yards and you finish 3.8 yards a carry.
Right.
I think they'll take that.
Yeah, that's
I think they'll take that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
By the way, Morris, his second 100-yard game of the season, the 5th of his career. But here's the thing that I found interesting. It's the 4th 100-yard game in his 16-game Patriots career since joining the team. So that tells me exactly what I originally thought about Sammy Morris, is that this guy's pretty good.
Yeah.
And if he can stay healthy, has the ability, I think, to be a feature back.
Runs hard. You know, he's a bigger, you know, he's not a small guy. He can, but
no,
he
he's
can,
good size.
He can pound it.
Honestly,
but he can get
the one thing I don't like about Sammy is one of the same things that I don't like about Lawrence Maroney. I think he runs upright too much.
He does. Yeah, he does. He does. You don't see him, get that,
yeah.
What's the phrase?
He doesn't get the lean going.
The lean,
you know,
yep,
you need to get that lean, you know, where you get the forward
lower,
momentum and you lead
yep.
with your shoulders.
Yep.
And you get the lean going. He's still too upright when he hits the hole, which is one of the big problems we saw with Maroney the last couple of years. And I don't know that he'll ever fix that. But when Morris gets down and he just, you know, leans a little bit, that's when he really gets the north-south thing going. I think he's the best north-south runner they got.
Probably, yeah. And he's a little more decisive, too. I mean, he's more decisive than Maroney. He sees the hole.
He'll hit a hole. And even if it's not the right hole, he's still going to make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken feathers.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So exactly. No, and, you know, that was a real tough injury he got last year. I think it was like a, you know, it was a fluky, you know, player's
chest injury.
The chest injury that knocked him out because he was, you know, he was running hard at that point and he was an important, he had proven to be a pretty important player. So, you know, doing well right now, but it's good to know. I mean, let's face it, the guys they got have had their injuries and you never know when the next one's going to come. And it's good to know that you can almost depend on any of them. And hey, let's be honest, a guy we haven't even mentioned yet. If push comes to shove and they need to go into a game, not a whole season, a game with Heath Evans as your lead back, he might be able to do the job too, like he did a couple years ago. So they've got a pretty diverse array of guys there, even though none of them are star-studded, and I'm guessing none of them are going to be named to the Pro Bowl when that gets
we're still waiting to hear.
Still waiting on that. Should be pretty soon. And you know, hopefully there's an offensive lineman, though, among the bunch. You know,
well, there were three last year. I mean, obviously, in the second half of the season, Matt Castle has been much more protected than he was early in the year when the offensive line was still a little bit in disarray and overcoming some injury problems of their own. Let me ask you then your answer to one of our questions that we've thrown out here. You know, other than Welker, who on this team do you think deserves to go? Who's a Pro Bowler?
Okay, there's no way you can argue against Wes Welker. But I don't, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to get voted in. He deserves to be. You can't argue that.
Eighth player in NFL history with back-to-back 100 catch seasons.
And all the
and
others.
You're telling me he's not going to be a Pro Bowl in either year? That, my friends, is a problem with the system
exactly.
if it happens.
And just, again, he deserves to be there. I don't know if he will. And is it four that go? Four wide receivers?
Yes. Right. You have two starters, two backups that get named.
So
that's
I would say that he's, you know, I originally thought,
be in the top
I originally
four.
Thought he deserves to be in the top two, maybe one. But I think it's Andre Johnson for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's Reggie Wayne. And again, I'm not necessarily saying everybody deserves it more than him. But
who else?
Again, not to saying they deserve it. Moss.
Yeah.
Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
They're probably the next ones, but I just feel
he doesn't
like
have the Braylon Edwards factor this year because I know that was the big controversy last year.
What's that?
Matching Welker up with Edwards from Cleveland.
What do you mean? Matching him up?
Well, I mean, Edwards is the one that got into the Pro Bowl basically over Welker last year.
No, you don't have that. But I just think there's a chance that, I mean, Welker only has two touchdowns this year and only had one last week, which I think was when the voting ended. And I just feel like a lot of people might look, and mostly fans, not so much players and coaches who also have a stake in the vote. Wide receiver only has one touchdown. That's going to be.
Yeah, but if you watch the Patriots at all, you know that Welker is the MVP on this team.
I agree.
He is the most valuable player.
And I think if it's four that go, maybe he's the fourth, and I think when all is said and done, there's a pretty good chance either way that he's in Hawaii because you always have one or two guys here or there that back out or are injured or whatever. He deserves to be there. He should be there. If last year he had a great year, but he was still seen as Wes Welker. Who is this guy? He's a fluke and all that. The second year, for sure, he should be. We'll see in a little bit when it all comes out. But I would say I think that it could be anywhere from zero to four. Pro Bowlers in the Patriots. I don't think it would be zero, but I think Gostkowski is a possibility. I think Mankins is a possibility. I think Seymour and Wilfork are possibilities. Beyond that, you know, I think Moss is a possibility. So of that five or six.
I would think that my choice was that I think, you know, there was probably one other one. I'm thinking that Welker's got to get in, but again, you're right. We could be wrong here. My other selection, in my own personal opinion, was Gostkowski.
Yeah,
and I thought that Wilfork had a chance, but I liked Gostkowski's a little bit more. Just to be honest with you,
he's got Jenkins too, and I don't remember. I don't remember how many guys.
Jenkins' play early in the year was pretty out. You know, last couple of weeks has been iffy, but early in the year, Jenkins had a
dominating.
And I think it's D ends are separate from D tackles,
yeah, right?
But you know, it's hard to say. And with kicker, I mean, who Baronis, I think, is up there.
Probably should be.
I'm not even sure who else.
But I think Gostowski's had as good a year as any other kicker.
There's no doubt.
I mean, plus, I know he's been amongst the league leaders in touchbacks most of the year as well, which I think is something that you look at. And I know that, you know, in terms of the players voting for you, that has to be a factor.
Sure. And you know, again, there's plenty of guys. There's always going to be guys who deserve to go and don't. And it's, you know, when all is said and done, some of them do go because having this at the end of the year, I mean, you know, guys whose seasons end next week, or week after, even if they're healthy, you go a full month without training, and then you're asked to come out to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys just pull out for whatever reason, and we'll see what happens there. So there could be guys who deserve to go, aren't voted in today, but end up there. But I think, you know, hey, what did the Patriots have last year? Seven?
Yes.
Was it seven or whatever
seven.
It was?
Yeah, seven.
You know, and it's not going to be the same. They just aren't the same guys that have these same numbers. But we'll see. I certainly think Welker deserves to go. He should go. And, hey, I hope he goes, but I just don't know. I just don't know, you know, what the fan voting is going to look like, and you match that up with player and coach. I don't think you get the breakdown, do you?
No.
Usually we don't.
No. Well, the announcement's supposed to come live on NFL Network, and so we have NFL Network right here. We're just kind of what I don't think it's going to start till 4 o'clock.
I think it's either 4 or 4:30. So
yeah,
this show will be will be kaput by then. But
let me give you just a little bit of a rundown. As long as we're on the subject here, because we did ask, you know, the fans what they thought earlier today in terms of the NFL.com writers and what they're thinking, what their predictions were for Pro Bowlers. In case you haven't stumbled on this yet on the website, you had to kind of look for it a little bit. In terms of the their selections. Right now, let's see, I'm kind of thumbing through it all because there's a million names here. Yep. Wes Welker, there were five guys from NFL.com that voted with their selections. Wes Welker was named by two of the five.
Hmm.
Randy Moss was named by two of the five.
See, I think Welker deserves to go over Moss. But I just don't think I just have a feeling it might not happen. Moss has 10 touchdowns. Welker is 2. That shouldn't be the only factor.
Well, let me give you an example. Steve Weich from NFL.com, right? His four wide receiver selections: Reggie Wayne, Andre Johnson, Brandon Marshall, Hines Ward.
Well, you know what? Again, like I said earlier, Andre Johnson, Reggie Wayne, I think are the two that are locks, in my opinion, to go. And then I think Brandon Marshall, Hines Ward is another one. They're all in that mix. Welker is at the top of it all. He should be there. But I just think some of these other guys who have been doing it for longer and have a little more, you know, they're more flamboyant. Their names are on SportsCenter more often. And that, you know, that matters on the fan voting for sure. And then you wonder with the players and the coaches. You just wonder. But
well, you know, see, Pat Kerwin, Johnson, Moss, Wayne, Hushmanzada.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Come on, guys. I mean, really. TJ, I mean, okay, numbers-wise, yeah, but come on.
Exactly. I'm telling you, there's no way TJ Hushmanzada should be there over Wes Welker.
That's nuts.
There's no, I mean, Hines Ward shouldn't either. I mean, I really respect Hines Ward's game, and he's been doing, you know, sort of what Wes Welker does for a long time, but you can't really find anyone who's having a better offensive year at the wide receiver than Welker. He should be there.
The other selection, all five were unanimous in picking Logan Mankins as one of the guards.
Okay.
So Logan Mankins looks like, you know, if the NFL.com writers are going to be, you know, correct, right, then it looks like Mankins would be the other one.
It's always interesting on the offensive line. I mean, who the heck am I to have any idea of the other 15 left guards in the in the AFC? I have no idea, but Mankins made it last year. He's obviously getting some name recognition for being a dependable, solid, Pro Bowl caliber left guard. Once you make it that first time, your chances of making it year after year are much better. But who's to say if there's another one that's better? I don't know.
Gostowski was named by four of the five,
and
they only selected one kicker.
And who was the other?
Rob Baronis.
Rob Baronis, okay.
So Gostowski, though, was named by four of the five writers.
Yep.
And he was the other Patriot that figured prominently in here. Richard Seymour was named by one of the five for defensive end.
Yeah.
And Vince Wilfork was named by two of the five for tackle.
Were the others Jenkins?
Chris Jenkins, three, four Chris Jenkins.
Okay.
So it looks like Jenkins, you know, it could. But again, they select – actually, they select three defensive tackles and three defensive ends.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes,
okay.
They do.
Okay.
Well,
a lot of teams play 4-3, so you
yes,
got it. You can't.
Correct.
The NFL can't choose. I think they also do four linebackers to – or do they do
actually
two
do
outside?
Three outsides and two insides.
Oh, okay. So that kind of
– And Gerard Mayo got two picks by two riders for inside linebacker.
Interesting. Wow. Mayo, you know, I hadn't even –
Mayo did get selected by two.
Now, quarterback – there's three, correct?
Yes, and Matt Cassel was not on anybody's ballot.
And I wouldn't have thought. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure Manning.
Peyton Manning
sure
was
Manning
1, 2, 3, 4. Yep, all five.
I'm sure we got Favre on a few.
Favre was not on the list.
On anyone's list?
Nobody's list.
Not on anybody's
In
list.
In fact, it was
Cutler's on a few, if not all.
Cutler was 1, 2, 3, 5. All five.
Okay.
So Manning and Cutler were unanimous.
Okay, and then
Philip Rivers
had to be on a few.
Had four, and Ben Roethlisberger one.
Okay. I guess I could see it shaking out that way. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think Roethlisberger deserves to go.
Sorry, Philip Rivers doesn't deserve to go.
I don't think Philip Rivers deserves. I mean,
look at the year San Diego's had. How does he get to go?
Exactly. But you know what? I mean, look at the year New Orleans has ended up having, and I'm sure Drew Brees is.
Yeah, but see, there's a difference. I think Drew Brees may be all that New Orleans has.
Yeah, true.
You know, I think you have to kind of look at the bigger picture here. Who really means more to their team? If there's a push comes to shove, all right, if there's a situation where you're going to tie it up and these guys are equal, you got to go to the tiebreaker. What's the tiebreaker? Your team!
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be the tiebreaker!
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. If that were the case... if that were the case, though, then the best blocking tight end would go to the Pro Bowl rather than whoever the best receiving tight end is. But we know that every year the best receiving tight end is going to go. Who's the tight end on there? Tony Gonzalez.
Tony
right?
Gonzalez and Dallas Clark.
And
almost
Dallas
unanimous.
Clark. And you know what? I don't know who the best blocking tight end is in the AFC, but what are the chances? I mean, will we ever see a tight end with 8 catches and 115 yards but a great blocker ever make the Pro Bowl? Probably not. Probably not. That's the way the Pro Bowl is. That's the way these All-Star games are. That's why, you know, coaches don't necessarily care for it. And the players who do end up going, 99% of them, credit the rest of their teammates for their selection. That's how it goes.
Right. By the way, Drew Brees was selected by all five guys for the NFC.
I'm sure he was, yeah. Along with, had to be...
Warner.
Of course.
Of all five.
Right.
And Eli Manning... Four of the five, and the one person got the lone vote was Donovan McNabb.
He's having a decent resurgence here at the end, but he's
NFL Pro Bowl.
Of course not.
It's ridiculous.
Of course
not. I would think the NFC quarterbacks would be way easier to decide than the AFC quarterbacks.
Yeah, and who else other than them?
Nobody.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You got the three right there, as far as I'm concerned. Now, and again, Brees, because he's, you know, had to carry that New Orleans team. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
But Manning,
right,
no. Manning, is he having a Pro Bowl year? He's not.
You know, I think he's getting the benefit of the doubt. I think it's a little bit of the Super Bowl hangover effect.
Right, but you're probably right. Just like with a lot of these offensive linemen, they get the previous Pro Bowl.
That's what I'm saying.
Check, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, all right. So anyway, that's kind of how the NFL.com writers looked at it. And you've got a pretty good idea now, you know, the Patriots that are serious. Being considered, I think, and again, we're probably looking at anywhere from half an hour to 40-45 minutes or so before NFL Network allows everybody to get in on it. And I'm sure if you're not close to a television where you can see it live, I'm sure NFL.com is going to mirror everything they do on the network.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
So
okay.
You can probably get that. And then as soon as we get word here, the Patriots being notified, and I think the teams actually get notified first, if I'm not mistaken, how they do it.
The players themselves?
Well, I think they tell the team, and it's up to the team to tell the players, unless the players are watching television.
Imagine,
but I think they notify the teams, right, these guys are Pro Bowl players. Patriots, you know, as soon as the Patriots know, I'm sure they'll post it right here on Patriots.com
exactly.
as well. So
that's
how that kind of breaks down here. Before we forget, do you have any nitpicks from
Nitpicks.
Sunday?
I had a feeling you'd ask that.
I'm sure you were probably ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of an obvious one is the special teams coverage. On the Justin Miller kickoff return, and I'm sorry, the kickoff return there, not the coverage. Yeah,
to me, I mean, that's just, it's good, and I mentioned this in the opening hour of the show today, Brian, but, you know, the Patriots, you know, offensively speaking on special teams, been pretty good this year. You can't have too many arguments with what they've had back there, and Ellis Hobbs has had a good kick returning here.
And you include Gostkowski in that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, special
right,
teams,
right,
offense,
right,
yeah,
right,
it's
right.
hard to argue. The Patriots right. have had one of the better offensively-minded special teams league, but defensively...
Yeah. And here's the thing. In this particular game, in that instance, it was 21-0 at that point. I'm sorry. It was 21-7 at that point. No, sorry. 28-7. And it's still so early in the game that, I mean, the Raiders are inept. The chances that they were going to come back into this game and make it a game were slim. But one of the few, very few ways they could do that, considering how bad their offense was at that point, is a kickoff return touchdown. They had enough chances. I mean, the Patriots kicked the ball off four times in the first 15 minutes of the game, so they had their chances there. But, you know, offensive play, you know, when a team gets a kickoff return, what you always hear after the game when they're talking about that is how important a kickoff return, a long kickoff return, is for momentum, especially when you're on the road. You're on the, you know, when you receive a kickoff, usually it's after a touchdown. Or it's after a score by the other team.
Oh, yeah.
Unless it's the beginning of the game or beginning of the half. So it's a great way for a team that just gave up a touchdown to nullify the momentum of the other team. The Patriots had unbelievable momentum. The only way the Raiders could get back in the game, the fans could maybe get back in the game, and they could get a little confidence, was to give up a long kickoff return or a touchdown, a kickoff return for a touchdown. That's what they did, and you can't let that happen. Now, fortunately for them, they came right back and ruined any of that momentum with the Ellis Hobbs one, but you got to give a nitpick right there. And sticking with special teams, what you keep on hearing, you know, one of the major themes was they didn't get that field goal off at the end of the first half.
Belichick took that one on his own shoulders.
As he's wont to do. He's very good. I mean, he never throws a player under the bus, but
no.
You got to figure, I mean, you know, this team usually knows the score, knows the time clock and all that, and is able to act accordingly. They should have at least gotten a snap off. Worst case scenario, the half ends and it's botched or whatever. Not a big deal. And then, you know, in the second half, Darren McFadden, who's really might be their lone long-term offensive player. You say that Jamarcus Russell,
I think he's got some potential. I saw enough of him against the Patriots defense that I think that they're, you know, if he somehow can work with the right guy, I think Jamarcus Russell can probably be a pretty good NFL quarterback.
I'll tell you what, though. He finished 17 of 31, 242 yards. Bear with me as I look for this right now, but on the Johnny Lee Higgins touchdown, which was, where was that? The Johnny Lee Higgins touchdown, 56 yards, and how many of that was after the catch? 40?
All of it.
Virtually all of it.
Let's
just say 45 conservatively.
Yeah.
Darren McFadden had three catches for 68 yards. Right there, you're talking about at least half of his yardage came on the Johnny Lee Higgins play and the three Darren, actually more than half. I think about more at least half. The Darren McFadden plays were all Darren McFadden, and alluding. I just feel like, you know, when he actually dropped back to pass, it was just bad decision after bad decision. But that being beside the point, I thought that Darren McFadden was able to just destroy the Patriots defense on those short screen passes. Jonathan Wilhite had a whiff. You know, not a terrible game for him. He had the touchdown, he had the interception, and a couple of other nice plays. But they probably need to shore up their recognition and their, you know, you can't really shore up their speed. The lack of speed that they have is the lack of speed that they're going to have. But you're going up against a dynamic rookie like Darren McFadden, that might happen. But, you know, they've got to shore that up a little bit. Fortunately, you know, time of the game and all that, the game was out of hand. It didn't really matter too much.
Right.
But, you know, they still have work to do defensively. But you know what? Listen, I'm not making the excuse. They have who they have, and they're not making the excuse either. But the bottom line is, three quarters of their defensive backfield were non-starters from the beginning of the year. Half of their defense, half of their linebacker wasn't out there. Will Fork beaten up, Warren's beaten up, and so does every team. But this is who they have. They're not going to be a very good defensive team down the stretch. I don't see where they're
going to have the reevaluated it. I mean, you know, you're right. This is who they have, and so I just want them
to... And it's not very good.
It's not very great. They're going to have to outscore people to win games,
right,
however many games they have left. I basically came to that conclusion about 3 weeks ago, and because of that, I've sort of reevaluated. I'm like, all right, this is what we got. As long as the defense can keep us in the game without giving up big, gouging plays like we saw against the Raiders. You mentioned McFadden, obviously the other one. To me, those are the ones that really hurt. They limit those, then this team can be competitive.
And the Higgins one, I mean, it was 21-0, but it was still only the first quarter. I mean, the game's not,
the game's not over. It's way, I mean, you know, even though it was a 21-0 lead, I'm thinking, you know what, you know, they better keep playing.
And they've got to do a better job.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't know if they have it in them to do a much better job.
I don't think they do.
The long-term forecast might play in their favor this Sunday because, let's be honest, Arizona, they've done terrible when they've come out here.
Pass defense was awful against Minnesota, but the run defense wasn't good either. They still allowed Peterson to go for, 168,
right.
I think. So.
But I think in this matchup, Patriots and the Cardinals, it seems like we might have a weather situation on Sunday. That's a long-term forecast, which I don't like to look at because it's always wrong. But it seems like and Arizona.
No, you just don't want to freeze your.
I'll be inside off. Like you. No, but here's the thing. Arizona has the worst running game in the NFL. If they're forced to run the ball on Sunday, because I mean, the Warner to Bolden, Warner to Fitzgerald.
Does it play into the Patriots' strength?
Absolutely.
Okay.
One of their strengths is running.
If we can call it a strength.
Relatively speaking, one of their strengths is run defense. And if their defensive line is fully healthy on this day and the weather's bad and Arizona is forced to rely on the run, they have the worst rushing offense in the league. And maybe you can, contain, if the weather's bad, it puts a lot more pressure on Warner to get the ball off quicker and shorter passing game. And maybe you can, they've got to do a better job tackling, though, in all areas. But they might luck out there with the weather. I think that, it would take, 60 degrees and sunny for Arizona to really be the Cardinals offense that we've seen most of the year. And that was what a disastrous loss they had to Minnesota at home. I mean, they've wrapped up their division, and I'm pretty certain they can't.
You know what? 4 weeks ago, they were 7-3, and we had a great conversation with the writer for their website, Darren Urban, just a little bit earlier, and in the opening hour of the program, and he was pretty much matter of fact about it as well. You know, they're rolling along at 7-3, and all of a sudden they clinch the division, and it's like whoosh, they hit the skids.
Yeah,
it's because they have only 13 players in the entire roster who have any kind of playoff experience at all. They have not been here before.
Right.
It's uncharted waters, uncharted territory. They just don't yet know how to handle it.
And when all is said and done, and maybe they'll do well in the playoffs, but they will have feasted on the worst division in the league, and they were terrible coming out east. So if they do have to play at the Giants, or if they have to play at Philadelphia, which probably wouldn't happen because they'd be higher seed, but if they have to play at the Giants or at Carolina even, I mean, that could, for whatever reason, it's kind of like one of those intangibles, like the Patriots did well out west, the Cardinals have done terrible out east, coming east. I don't know what the reason is, but if they do have to, historically, they've shown that they don't do all that well. So, we'll see. They've locked in a home game for their first game in the playoffs, and maybe they play like a Tampa or they play an Atlanta, something like that, or a Philadelphia. Maybe they can do well at home, but I see them being
If the playoffs were to start today, it would be Dallas. They'd host Dallas.
Host Dallas. They'd be 4 and Dallas would be 5 or 3 and 6, whatever.
Yeah, 4 and 5. 4 and 5.
Could be an interesting game. But I just think that for this game on Sunday, I think a lot of factors are playing into the Patriots' hands, and it could be the kind of game that that they really need.
The other question that I had asked today was, what do you think is the most likely scenario for the Patriots to slip into the playoffs themselves, via the wild card or the division title?
Well, I'm really enjoying this, John. I'm enjoying this.
Because we've got some suspense here.
We've got some suspense. And, hey, last year was thoroughly interesting for a lot of different reasons. But this, to me, is just so interesting. It seems like every week, like 1 week, hey, looks like the division's a little more attainable. The next week, it's a wild card. Right now, it's a wild card. And I've said for a few weeks, I think they get in as a sixth seed. I really do. I think Baltimore, and they lucked out.
I think Baltimore loses at Dallas, and I think you're right. I think they get in as the wild card.
And I think they do. I think the Patriots win their last two games. I mean, they should win these last two games. I think they will. And I really feel that the Jets and Miami are both going to struggle this week. Jets at Seattle, Miami at Kansas City.
But whether they lose, I mean, they both struggled this last week.
But you know what? If Seattle plays the Jets the way the Seattle play the Patriots.
They'll win.
Seattle will win.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
The Jets, we were talking about Arizona doing very poorly when they've come out east.
Yep.
The Jets have been terrible west.
They're 0-3 out west.
They're 0-3.
Right?
Yeah. And unlike the Patriots, they had, they had them spread out. Now, going into a season, some coaches might feel, hey, that's going to be better for us. We won't be out of our routine. Yeah, there'll be a little bit of wear and tear. It's a balance. It's a give a little, take a little. But they've been terrible. And if that team has any kind of pride, which I think they're showing these last couple of weeks that they do, this is the last home game for Mike Holmgren.
Right.
Maybe, for whatever that means, you wouldn't think that NFL players would think that way. Maybe if they have a lot of respect for their head coach, last home game, they play with a lot of pride, they could win that game. Miami at Kansas City. Hey, Kansas City's terrible. Their GM resigned yesterday. Maybe he was fired. I don't know. They're a terrible team. They don't have anything to play for. But historically, it's a tough place to play a football game and for road teams. And, you know, Miami has been one of the biggest overachieving teams this year. Maybe they're due for laying an egg. I don't know. But I'm just saying that
So you think the wild card then is the most likely scenario for the team?
I do, but I think the division, I mean, I think there's still some scenarios. Because what the Patriots need for the division is they need either the Jets or Dolphins to lose this week,
right.
And then they need
the other team to beat the final week.
If the Jets lose and Miami wins this week,
then you have to have the
Miami
Jets beat
Miami. Exactly.
Jets would have to beat Miami.
The Patriots would need to go 2-0, and both of these teams go 1-1.
Which is a believable scenario.
It's very possible. So we don't know. You know,
but the easiest way is to have Baltimore lose at Dallas.
Because
if Baltimore loses at Dallas, then the wild card door is swung wide open, and all the Patriots have to do is win. Therefore, the Patriots, if Baltimore loses Saturday night, Patriots control their own destiny to get into the playoffs.
Well, that's a Saturday night. That's right.
It's a Saturday night game.
So
they'll know before kickoff whether or not they control their own destiny to get into
the
postseason.
I hadn't even thought about that, the Saturday night game. But it's just so interesting. You've got it's not like there's, you know, eight teams that they've got to be scoreboard watching. There are three. Indianapolis, a little bit, but not so much. You got to look at Baltimore. You got to look at Miami. You got to look at the Jets. As it turned out on Sunday, you know, the Jets game and the Miami game ended right around the time the Patriots game started, I think just before. So not that the Patriots players, you hope, weren't paying attention to that, but we're in the press box at Oakland Alameda County Coliseum watching the outcomes of those two games. And so you kind of knew what was going on. Tough breaks for the Patriots there. But then while the Patriots game is going on, I think just after the Patriots game ended was the end of the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game.
Right.
I didn't know until a little while later exactly how that played out, other than that Pittsburgh won, which helped the Patriots. So very interesting down the stretch here. I think if you're a fan, you enjoy this sort of thing. Hey, we've been spoiled in the past, you know, a couple of seasons where, you know, you have first round buys clinched early on, obviously last year. But I think this is a very interesting one. And I'll be honest, if the Patriots make it into the playoffs, and they will have, if they do, most likely they will have won their final four games. I mean, it's hard to imagine them getting into the playoffs if they go 1-1 down the stretch.
Right.
They will have won four straight games, and potentially, if they win the division, they're hosting a game. But either way, they're going to be a dangerous team come playoff time if they make it in, because they'll have two things that you always hear players say: we're playing our best football down the stretch, and we have experience in the playoffs. Those are two dangerous things if I'm an opponent.
All right, well, we have a few minutes left here. Let's squeeze in a few emails.
Sure.
Jay from Hanson says, looking at the potential playoff matchups, I think the easiest road for the Pats is for them to secure the wild card spot. So you got someone who agrees with you there.
Yep.
Even though they would have all road games, if they win the division, it looks like this: it'd be Pats versus Miami or the Jets or Baltimore, then the Pats against the Steelers. If they won the wild card, it would be Pats versus Miami or the Jets, and then Pats versus Tennessee. I think Tennessee has peaked. It appears to me to be an easier game, especially with Collins at the helm and Haynesworth nursing an injury. You know, that's an interesting point, because Haynesworth is going to miss the last two regular season games.
But keep this in mind,
Tennessee,
that Tennessee-Pittsburgh game this weekend, I think, is pretty definitive on the first seed, second seed.
Correct.
I think the winner of that.
That's also true. Tennessee has not clinched the number one seed.
And Pittsburgh is a hotter team than Tennessee now.
Well, I said that at the beginning of the show. I said right now, to me,
so,
Pittsburgh's playing the best football in the NFL.
Don't rule out Pittsburgh getting the number one seed.
Right.
Very attainable for them. And I'll tell you what, the schedule that they've had, if they get the number one seed, boy, there will never be a team that's earned it more than them. Even though last week was a fluky win, tough schedule.
So, I agree.
But you know, we're talking about how interesting it is to think about the scenarios for the Patriots to get in.
Sure,
it's also a lot of fun to think about who they would play if they get in. So, you know, it's going to be a fun couple weeks here.
This one comes from Chris, who says, should Mayo, Moss, Welker, and Castle all go to the Pro Bowl, or will they all get snubbed? And who deserves to go more? We kind of answered that a little bit. We certainly think Welker's deserving. They're all deserving, but of the four, Welker is most likely, I think. And I'm not sure any of the other three get in.
What was it, Kostowski, Moss?
No, it was Mayo, Moss, Welker, Castle.
Yeah, I think in terms of likelihood to get in, wow. That's it. Because I've been saying I think Welker is, to me, Moss and Welker are equally likely to get in. I got to be honest. I think Welker deserves it more than Moss, but I think they're equally as likely to get in. Then I would say it's I'm sorry, it was Castle was one of them, right? Mm-hmm. Then I would say it's Castle, then Mayo.
Yeah.
Mayo's having a very good year, and he's probably a front runner for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Just don't think it's Pro Bowl worthy.
I agree with that. And I think that's fair.
He may have a few in his future if he keeps it up. But I think the two wideouts are the most likely of that four.
TGNNJ says, what are the chances of the Pats landing Asamoah? He's a free agent next year, right? Will the Raiders franchise him? Yes, they will.
They probably will.
No, there's no problem about it. We talked about this last week on the show, and they will definitely franchise him. They franchised him once.
Right.
They're allowed to do it again. They've already talked about franchising him.
Yeah.
So he won't truly be a free agent until, well, after next season.
How about the Patriots franchise Castle? They franchise Asamoah and you trade him.
Well, TG says, Jordan and Moss were able to escape, so he says the talented Raider players must be set free.
Yeah, well,
and you can only hope, because I think, having a Asamoah would be unbelievable for the Patriots. There's no way the Raiders let him go to New England. There's way they're going to let that trade happen with Moss burning them, with Lamont Jordan burning them. It's not going to happen.
Can't risk it. Can't risk it if you're them. I'll tell you what, Asamoah has made it pretty clear over the last, say, 18 months that he wants out of Oakland.
Sure.
He seems like he's done it in a more professional way than a lot of guys do. He's never held out, I don't believe. And he's a very talented guy. Having seen him, I think, for the first time in person, that wasn't his best of games on Sunday. A couple of penalties and a couple of pretty good wide receivers beat him. So that wasn't his best game. But it appears as though teams are very, very, very hesitant to throw his way, which is the most respect you could give a cornerback.
Well, his size. He's 6'2", 210. That's big for a guy who basically plays corner, although I know he has some safety experience.
And the guy wants out. I'm sure, I don't know if you heard the conference call last week. He had a conference call with the New England media. And sort of, without naming players, called out a bunch of players as having given up, as you were saying early on about seeing some of the defensive veterans. So he clearly wants out. He wants to change the scenery. Probably deserves it, because that organization is in disarray. Even down to, just to change topics a little bit, did you see how Tom Cable is ripping this assistant? One of their assistants announced after the game, or informed the team after the game, that he's leaving to go to University of Tennessee with Lane Kiffin. And Tom Cable ripped him, and Tom Cable ripped Lane Kiffin for taking a guy. So I'm just saying, wherever the blame goes, this is just an organization in disarray. There's just no two ways about it. So Asamoah wants out. Whether that'll happen or not remains to be seen.
Jeff in Moncton, New Brunswick, do you think there's any advantage for the Pats having the Cardinals traveling from west to east and having to play the early game, which would be 11 a.m. Arizona time? Well, Arizona is 0-4, traveling east this year, so
it's a huge advantage.
It'll be a disadvantage. He says, I'm not sure of the record, but West Coast teams playing on the East Coast in the early games this year have not fared too well. That is a fact.
I think there's one win.
One win.
Among them all, and one was win. That, you know what, I can't think of it. It was recent. It was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't remember which one it was. Was it who played?
Was it San Francisco?
Buffalo. San Francisco beat Buffalo. That was what it was.
San Francisco beat
Buffalo. It's a huge advantage. And you know what? What's the name of the emailer here?
Jeff.
Jeff makes a great point about the 1 o'clock games. I wasn't even factoring that in when I said earlier that this matchup is very much playing in the Patriots' favor. I think that time zone difference. That is a vast difference between East teams traveling west and west traveling east. When East teams travel west and it's a 1 o'clock local time game, your body clock might be still on 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
The other way around, it's a 10 o'clock game. It's a big difference that must play into it, and it's a major advantage for the Patriots.
All right, our friend James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. I knew he would come through with some numbers here.
What do you got?
He says something unprecedented would have to happen to keep the Patriots out of the playoffs if they do finish the season 11-5. The unprecedented thing that has to happen is for six teams in the same conference to finish 11-5 or better for the first time since the NFL expanded the schedule to 16 games in 1978. There has been five teams finishing 11-5 or better in one or both of the conferences seven times since 78. And he listed all the teams. He says, let's hope that the Patriots do win out, and then one or even better, two of those teams get a loss so this doesn't happen. And, yes, this is part of the scenario that we've discussed. He said, should all three win this weekend, then the Patriots still have two very slim chances to make the playoffs if they win out, a Ravens loss to Jacksonville and or a Jets-Dolphins tie. And I've said neither one of those is going to happen. Winning the division would be my preference, as I would like for them to continue the streak. In that case, though, the Patriots would most likely be hosting the Ravens in the first round of the playoffs. It would be a much tougher matchup, as the Ravens have a good defense. The weather would slow down the Patriots' improving offense. Getting the wild card would give them a better matchup, as they would either be at the Jets or at the Dolphins. They have won at both places this year, and I feel they would be the better team in both cases.
Do the Broncos have any chance? I forget what the Broncos' record is right now. Do they have any chance of getting
to three? The worst they can do is the four.
Okay, and probably at best they can. No, certainly at worst.
I don't.
I don't think so, because
They're 8-6.
They're 8-6, and if it's the Jets or
Dolphins. So they can. So, yeah.
Well, the AFC East winner is assured of being no worse than 10-6.
That's correct.
Because if it comes down to the Jets Dolphins game, they can't put it.
See,
I
think the AFC East winner is going to be the
I'm sorry. The Patriots can be 8-11-5. Right.
Right. But AFC East winner, I do believe, is going to be the 3 seed.
Right. I think I'm just trying to think out loud. I think Denver, which has clinched, is locked into 4.
I believe so. Okay. So, like I said, the AFC East winner is going to be the 3.
Right. So good chance it's AFC East versus AFC East in that 3-6.
Absolutely, in the 3-6. Yeah. There's a very good chance of that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is interesting, and I think the Patriots, traveling to either of those. I mean, it's probably true that it's a better.
Well, then, hell, in that instance, let's just be the division champ. Let's get those suckers back here.
Get them out here. It's the easier way to do it. You know, back in 2001, 2003, and 2004, in that period of time, I kept on thinking, you know, as far as the Patriots are concerned, if we're gonna be if we're gonna bother playing in January, we might as well just win the whole thing, right?
I mean,
2002, they were like, you know what? Let's just skip it. We're not gonna get there. 2001, 2003, and 2004. If you're going to make it, you might as well win the whole thing. Why bother otherwise? So, hey, if you're going to make it, give yourself the best path to get there. And
all right, B-Lo, very quickly, what's on Patriots Today for us?
We will have a little bit of chat about the Pro Bowl balloting. It hasn't come out yet, but we will have all the details. We got a little bit of Ty Warren, who had a little take a kid to school this morning, which is some interesting stuff, NFL program. We've got a little more analysis of the road trip that the Patriots just finished, and the looking ahead to the next couple of weeks, and a little bit of a look at Wes Welker, whether he does or doesn't make the Pro Bowl today, a little bit of a look at how he's gone from, over the last 2 years, from, you know, sneaky, unknown guy to, a guy with Pro Bowl numbers.
Beauty. By the way, the Pro Bowl show has started on NFL Network, so if you're able to get to the dish or you have it on your cable, it's going to get going here very, very shortly. I'm sure NFL.com will be updating here momentarily, and as soon as the Patriots get word of Patriots picks, you'll see it right here on the website as well on Patriots.com. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. Tomorrow, Daryl Johnston, right, from Fox Moose, right? And he's going to come on in the first hour of the program tomorrow, so the Fox will have the TV
coverage.
That's
right. We got was it Kenny Albert, Daryl Johnston, and Siragusa, I believe, is on board.
So he'll be a part of the program tomorrow, and I think Eric Scalavina will join us as well, and we'll continue with your emails. B-Lo, thanks, buddy.
Hey, thank you.
All right, way to go. St. Pat's time, St. Pat's channel, manana. Kids.